Well, everyone, welcome to this webinar on maximizing growth at each stage in your career. It's Wednesday, February 28th. This is the first of the ICMA coaching program webinars in 2018. We have a total of six, and we're delighted that you've all joined us today. We're particularly appreciative of our platinum sponsor, ICMARC, and our gold sponsors, ICMA and CalICMA. It's particularly through the support of ICMARC that we're able to offer this and other resources to you without charge. ICMARC is dedicated to supporting important professionals like yourselves in your everyday work in helping our communities be outstanding, and ICMARC is building public sector retirement security. We're also delighted to have 28 state association coaching partners. They help us in identifying topics, identifying the presenters for these webinars, and in getting information out to their members about these activities, and to be embedding coaching in their own associations. And we support them in doing that, and we're delighted that so many state associations are participating. We also have eight outreach partners that assist us in getting a wide and diverse audience, both for our for each of the webinars and also in terms of our presenters for the webinars. So we're thankful for their work with us. In terms of the session today, we're going to be looking at the major stages in a career in local government, some key factors for success, some examples of ways to leap forward, to be resilient, and enjoy the profession. I'm going to be providing a strategic framework for career fulfillment. I'm doing that as director of the ICMA coaching program, and as somebody who's been working for over two decades in coaching leaders and organizations in local governments and in public and private sector organizations around the world. We're then going to turn to Pam Weir, and you're going to be hearing quite a bit from each of them about their career path, because that's part of what this webinar is about. What really excited me about inviting Pam to participate in this webinar is that she wrote a blog piece that was entitled From Mentee to Mentor in 5 Years. And I thought, wow, let's hear from her. And you'll hear a very exciting story from her about her early career and how she's established herself in that. We'll be moving then to the mid-career. With Ben Bryant. He's the assistant city manager in Happy Valley, Oregon. He'll be telling you about his background. But what struck me about Ben is that he's been working since the very start of the coaching program in getting communities throughout Oregon involved in the coaching program and very active with that. So eager to hear from Ben and how he's been navigating his career. And then from the executive perspective, we're going to hear from Bertha Henry. She's a CAO in Broward County. As you all may know about the tragic events in Parkland, one of the communities within Broward County, 10 days ago, we're all having our hearts go out to Bertha, but we're very thankful that she's taking the time to be with us today when I'm sure she's had very, very long days over that time. Her agency is not directly responsible for the police or other responses, but she's certainly serving that community and that whole county in heroic ways at this time. So we're going to have a polling question. We do the polling questions to make sure that we're getting a good read from our audience. We encourage people to participate in groups. So the polling question is asking you how many are on your line. Just click that. We have actually over 900 locations registered for today's webinar. Some of them are going to be catching up with our digital recording, but we're glad that hundreds of you are joining us live for this session. It's a great way to be interactive through the polling questions, through questions and answers, etc. So we're so pleased that so many are here with us today. Again, if you're trying to find the presentation materials for this or any of the webinars that we've conducted, you can find them at icma.org/coachingwebinars and then click on Agendas and Archives, and you'll find them there. We have several dozen recorded sessions, so you can look for topics that are of interest to you, as well as our upcoming live sessions on a variety of topics that we'll be covering at the very end of this session. So let's take a look and see how our audience is shaping up for today. So I see that about four-fifths of you are there on your own. The rest are in groups of varying sizes, including a group, some groups of over 20 people. So we're excited that all of you have chosen to join us and glad for your participation. What I want to do now is share with you some perspectives about a strategic framework for career fulfillment. So today's session is going to be about both a framework for thinking about your career and the different stages of a career, but then some great case study examples from our presenters about what their experience has been and what they've learned from it. So we're going to be taking a look at how can you thrive in local government. In particular, what I found in the research for the book, Take Charge of Your Talent, and talking and working with thousands of people, is that there's a great correlation between using more of your talent and having greater satisfaction. So one of the things that's a win-win out of this is that the things that you do to use more of your talent are going to help you be more satisfied in your career and to move forward effectively. So we're going to be taking a look at those issues along the way. And the key is to grow wherever you are. 80% of your growth is going to happen in the job that you're currently in, versus thinking about what job you're moving to next. So figuring out a way to make that work, to reinvent yourself even in the job that you're in, is critically important because your community's needs, your organization is changing, and it doesn't work to just sort of stand in place and hope that things will be fulfilling to you. Each of us needs to be agile and adjust and grow. And so making your current situation the best that it can be is really important. That's going to boost your enjoyment. It's going to resolve issues that otherwise will follow you. I'm struck by so many people that I coach who say, I want to get to a new place because, it really aggravates me at where I am that such and such is happening. Well, I found that more often than not, whatever that is going to show up for the person at a later time, unless they figure out how they want to get that worked out. So it's important to figure out how you can work through the issues that you have and the stage that you're at to make it more fulfilling for you down the road. And that gives you positive energy and results that you can use to pursue new opportunities of interest to you. There's a book from a colleague of mine, Up Is Not the Only Way, Rethinking Career Mobility, that you might want to take a look at if you're finding yourself in that situation. We're keying off today ICMA's career stages. ICMA's professional development team has identified five stages and has organized on the website all the different resources and programs and conferences, et cetera, that you could look at based on that classification. So I really encourage you to take a look at that webinar, at that website location, so that you can be taking advantage of those insights and all the resources that are there. I'm only going to have a chance to highlight a few of them today. So I'm very interested in learning, as our presenters are, in what career stages are represented in our audience today. So we're going to open a polling question here and invite you to identify where you are. We hope that you're there in a group that's involving a wide range of folks, because that'll help your learning. And we'll see where you are in the tracking of this as we go along here. And again, there are lots of resources for you at the ICMA website, both in the career stages section and at icma.org/coaching. And so I encourage you to be tapping those resources as they come along. And we'll be welcoming your questions as you're thinking and responding to the webinar so that we get a chance to see what's on your mind. So let's see where we are with our audience today. And so what we're seeing is that a lot of you are in the mid-career stage and kind of equal numbers in early and executive, and a few in the students. In fact, we welcome all the students. There's ICMA student chapters throughout the country. There are also many MPA programs that are using these webinars as a way to help inform and attract people into the local government profession. So thank you all for being with us today. So we're going to be moving on to talking about how you can maximize your fulfillment, how you can identify key factors for success for your desired stage, some accelerators to boost your results, how coaching can help, and some additional resources that can be useful to you as you go forward. I'm going to just go, since we don't have many on the call from the student phase, and welcome you looking at this in more detail later, but there's a lot of key factors for success that you can start really at the student level, learning the framework, learning about government finances, developing your analytical skills, presentation skills, etc., and your commitment to continuous learning that really starts at your very beginning efforts in this profession. Some of the accelerators are ways to intern, to become a local government management fellow. There's an opportunity for that, and ways to attend annual or regional conferences and networking. You can even do that on a virtual basis. So there's lots of things you can be doing to accelerate your progress as a student. Coaching can help you provide, gain practical perspectives, and to get help to network in your areas of interest. So there's lots of things that you can do, and there are many resources that are highlighted on the website. Here are just a few: the virtual conference opportunities, these webinars, the student chapters, other things that you can be doing. Early career is actually about, of course, you know, making the big step and getting that first job, getting positioned in local government effectively. That's critically important. We want you to be engaged in that, and developing your relationships and demonstrating your ability to tackle and complete key tasks and being dependable and kind of a go-to resource and scanning for opportunities to increase your skills, experience, and responsibilities. So we're going to look at some of the accelerators here. That is, of course, if you bring fresh ideas and approaches, that's going to help you advance in your early career. Volunteering for stretch projects is a big opportunity. Looking at ways that you can tap the coaching resources is another. And how to create some career assets, some things that you can point to about what you've learned, processes you've developed, or tools you can share with others. Great way to show that you're really engaging in the profession and you're ready and able to take on additional responsibilities. Coaching gives you that perspective on early career experiences. You know, you're trying to figure out, okay, I'm experiencing this. I don't know what this is like. Is all of local government like this? How do I calibrate my experience? That's a great way to tap coaching to do that and to expand your network for additional career growth opportunities. So many things that you can tap coaching to do, and there's lots of resources. There's a whole set of online free talent development exercises you can do. I'll highlight those at the end. ICMA has great programs for emerging leaders, Local Government 101. There's a Career Compass article on I'm Not Ready. You know, some of the people at an early stage think, I'm not ready to really move forward. Well, that's a great article to read to find out. You know, you in fact may be ready, but what you really need is a little nudge to go do that. So again, look at all the resources that are available online for you around this. So now I'm going to turn the presentation over to Pam Weir, and Pam's going to share with you what her experience has been. And so Pam, thanks so much for joining us today, and here are the controls to get you started.
Great. Thank you so much. Good afternoon, everyone. It's a treat to be able to spend time with all of you today. I just want to thank ICMA, Don, Bertha, and Ben for the opportunity to share with you. And I'm here to share my early career story and offer my recipe for success. So growing up, I had two loves. I had government and I had being a summer camp counselor. My love for summer camp started as a child. I loved being a part of this pop-up community every summer where campers and staff had to work together to keep life running smoothly. And then government came into my life a little bit later, as you can imagine, when my high school administration actually tried to prevent me from starting a gay-straight alliance club in my public high school. We learned there was a federal law called the Equal Access Act that protected our right to promote the club at our public school. And that research ultimately enabled our success with our school administration. And so this was a really profound experience that demonstrated the significant impact that the work of policymakers and public administrators could have on my life and the lives of many others. And so with that and those two loves, my earliest jobs alternated between the two arenas of summer camp and government. And despite, as you can see, my outfits being drastically different between being a congressional intern and being a summer camp director, they were both focused on improving people's lives at different levels. And then in the summer of 2010, all of these worlds collided. So I worked for a summer camp that was specifically for LGBT youth, many of whom who were homeless. And I spoke with the youth about my policy work that I'd done in Washington, D.C., promoting safer schools for LGBT youth and anti-bullying legislation. And while these youth were certainly interested in the cause, they opened my eyes to a much bigger truth, that many of them couldn't even attend school because they had been kicked out of their homes, and they were simply trying to survive. They survived on public transit. They spent a lot of time at the library. They were always seeking food, shelter, and basic safety. These people that I was working with cared so much more about kind of surviving through the night than they could worry about issues of equality and federal protection. And so this experience brought to mind Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and apologize for the graduate school flashbacks there, but it got me thinking that the community that I was most trying to serve, they were still really struggling with the bottom of the pyramid, those basic safety and psychological needs. And I was really using my skills to fight for the top half, for the greater social issues and self-actualization. But the very things that were keeping people alive were being provided by their cities and counties. And so a light bulb went off in my head. You know, I learned this basic truth, and I took a minute to step back and reflect on why I was passionate about my various interests from summer camp to governance. And something clicked with me at that point. You know, I wanted to spend my life ensuring that people's basic needs were met so that then they could have the opportunity to pursue their own dreams throughout their lives, just as I had had the privilege to do so myself. And so my love affair with local government began. A career in local government would sort of allow me to have the best of all worlds. I could serve my community, I could support marginalized or disenfranchised populations, and I could still pursue my career in public service. It was the perfect intersection of all my passions, and it had a very tangible and gratifying impact. So many institutions and organizations have shaped my career path along the way. I started at Smith College in Northampton, Massachusetts, where I got my Bachelor of Arts in Government. Then I headed over to Arizona State University, where I was a Marvin Andrews Fellow and had the chance to work with both the Alliance for Innovation and then do an internship with the City of Avondale. Upon graduation, I went and participated in the City of Fort Collins Management Assistantship Program. It's a one-year program for recent graduates. And it just happened that in September of the year that I was in Fort Collins, the Front Range of Colorado, you may remember, experienced a devastating flooding event. And so because Estes Park, one of our neighbors up the mountain, was so short-staffed, the city manager of Fort Collins gave me an opportunity to take a one-month temporary assignment working in disaster recovery in Estes Park. And, you know, I had no clue what I was going jumping into an opportunity like that, but it was something that I leapt at to learn quite a bit about community resiliency and disaster recovery in just a short month. And that experience has influenced my career ever since. After that one-year program in Fort Collins, I headed to rural Arizona to a city called Sierra Vista. And in Sierra Vista, I was a management analyst and also had the chance to serve as their budget officer. And from there, that led me to my current position in Goodyear. And what I'd like to share from this journey is really that getting such diverse experiences in my early career has really been a strong foundation for me as a public servant. And I encourage all of you listening, especially those in your early career, not to shy away from communities that might be smaller, larger, getting an opportunity to go urban or rural, or be willing to move around some, because that diversity really lends to a much broader perspective. So I have a few factors that I sort of attribute my early career progression to, and I want to go through them briefly. You know, it's just been 5 years since my graduate school graduation, And I've learned that success is a snowball. One thing leads to the next. Don mentioned I wrote a blog post and then I got invited to do a webinar. And so each thing that I participate in sort of leads to the next opportunity. The stronger you can build that foundation earlier in your career, the larger that snowball has the opportunity to get down the road. And so there are many ways to do this, and these are just ones that have really stuck out to me along my journey. So the first is say yes to all the opportunities, large or small. You know, you want to volunteer for new projects, and you don't have to know everything. I certainly didn't know how to recover from a natural disaster when I was offered an opportunity in Estes Park, but I was eager and I was willing to learn, and that took me a long way. And you want to make time in the early career to achieve those big wins, and also document them along the way. So for me, you know, I encourage you, your resume is not something that you should just look at once you're ready to apply for the next job. Go ahead and update that as you go along. You may think you'll never forget that huge project you did as an intern, but you'd be surprised as your experiences accumulate how you can lose sight of certain skill sets. So the second piece of advice I have is about nurturing your network. You know, I was told about the importance of networking early on, but it took me a while to really understand what it was. And networking is very much a long game. It's not a short game. Your network is cultivated over time, and truly the quantity of your relationships are not necessarily as important as the depth of the relationships that you build professionally. So I have chosen to engage in many of the programs that Don mentioned, mentoring programs, writing opportunities, conferences, and then locally, you know, I volunteer for pretty much everything I can inside my organization and with professional associations just to gain that breadth of experience. One little tidbit is whenever appropriate, I send thank you notes. I found that the thank you note has been an incredible tool to solidify relationships along the way and create lasting friendships. So this slide in front of you shows many of the organizations that I am a part of in one form or another. There are lots of others out there that I really encourage you to find your particular affinity group that works for you. But all of these organizations in some form or another have events or blogs or various training opportunities. And so I encourage you, if there's one that really jumps out to you, get in touch and volunteer. I guarantee you they're always looking for early career professionals to lend their perspective to what it is that they're working on. So the next is understanding your strengths and using them. So it's important to understand what differentiates you as an employee and a professional. Consider your technical skills, your life experiences, and your professional background. Your strengths may obviously relate to your position, or they may be something totally unique that you keep in your back pocket. For example, my talents as a camp counselor came in handy when the Employee Engagement Committee last year asked me to MC the annual all-employee event. It certainly wasn't a requirement of my job description, but it was a major contribution I was able to make to my organization, and I had a lot of fun bringing a skill set that I didn't normally get to use on a daily basis. So keep in mind that what builds your reputation and your relationships professionally, they're only partly tied to your competencies. It also requires that you have to be someone that people want to work with. So, you know, are you willing to take on any task, no matter how big or small? You possess empathy and a sense of humor. Can you be counted on to follow up and openly communicate? Those types of qualities can make or break your effectiveness as much as your work experience. And then finally, do your research. I believe you can't be too overprepared when you enter into a professional setting. And I encourage you not to ever walk into an interview or a meeting or a conference without having done your homework ahead of time. You know, the internet is pretty magic. It enables us to find out a lot without even leaving our desk. And so I encourage you, before you head out to that conference or networking mixer, do a little background. Take a look at who are the people that are going to be there that you'll be talking to. If it's at a particular community, take a few minutes to understand what issues and challenges are they facing that you can ask about or contribute to. It goes a long way in easing that small talk, fear of small talk and things like that that can happen in some of those networking situations when you don't know anyone. So I'm completely biased and I've yet to reach any of the other career stages, but I'm pretty sure the early career is the prime of life. So following those four basic guidelines that I mentioned to you, I've had a really incredible, fulfilling career. I get to wear many literal and figurative hats along the way, as you can see. And I've taken advantage of working on a wide variety of projects and seeking to learn whatever I can about the profession along the way. So I've found that as long as I'm meeting the objectives of my job first and foremost, that every organization I have worked for has been supportive of my learning and development and experiencing other departments and facets of the city. I'm someone who's always worked directly in the city manager's office, and so I aim to get out to operational departments when possible for tours, for ride-alongs, or for opportunities to connect the organizational strategy work that I do with day-to-day operations. When pursuing your first jobs in local government, I highly encourage you to seek out organizations that have a culture that support growth and development, along with cross-training opportunities. You have an opportunity when you're interviewing to ask the organization if they're going to support your career growth, and I encourage you to make that something that you take into consideration. The early career is not without its challenges, certainly, and since P stands for Pam, I'm giving you my three P's of challenges to the early career, and those are patience, persistence, and position. So what I mean by patience is just that gaining experience takes time, and organizational change takes even longer. It can be hard to accept, but your ability to slow down and ensure your team is with you is far less of a struggle than trying to rush through something. Persistence goes hand in hand with patience. While things do take time, they also require drivers to make it happen. And so don't give up when your desired outcomes aren't immediate. And then finally, many of us early eager career types want to have an impact larger than what our job description sounds like. And so in this stage, you need to learn how to inspire and influence people even when you aren't the boss. This requires building relationships and trust across the organization and making a compelling case for why others should join you. So as I wrap up my section, I want to leave you with my kind of five biggest pieces of advice, which you will also see in the blog post if you decide to take a look at that. The first is be authentic. As you heard at the beginning of my talk, I have a vivid story and a compelling motivation for why I continue in my career. So what is yours? What is that reason that you go to work every day? And it's important to be able to articulate this in order to connect to people. It took some practice for me to gain that confidence and to get comfortable bringing my unique perspective to the job. But remember, diverse ideas and experiences enrich the way we serve our communities ultimately. And so it's our responsibility to bring that to the table. The second is you don't have to know everything. Local government is an ever-changing environment. We rarely feel equipped to solve a problem at the outset of a challenge. Rather than shy away because we're not all-knowing, it's important to dig in with a balance of confidence and humility to tackle projects or policy dilemmas. A strong combination of hard work, critical thinking, and communication skills can be all you need in the absence of sheer technical experience. Success in government, number three, cannot be achieved alone. Excellent public service, it depends on collaboration with residents, businesses, and across departments within our organization. If you don't know where to start, pull a team together and figure it out together. And when you achieve your goals, as I mentioned before, say thank you early and often. Recognizing others' contributions will make them more likely to want to work with you again in the future. The fourth is that people are more important than tasks. And this is one of the best and strongest lessons I learned early on. For the first few months of my first full-time job in local government, I really kept my head down and focused very intently on my work. I would talk with coworkers in meetings and when I needed to communicate about a project, but that was the extent of my interaction. A mentor of mine pointed out what was not initially obvious to me, that people actually appreciate it when you get to know them as people more than they appreciate a taskmaster. Learning that it was okay to take the time to build relationships and bring more of my whole self to the job transformed my enjoyment and my productivity at work. Even my tasks became easier when I built more comfortable relationships with my colleagues. And then finally, all of us always have something to learn and something to teach. And I want to end my section the way I started, with a little story. So you may remember in the summer of 2016, the world was rocked by a new phenomenon known as Pokemon Go. an augmented reality game in which people could wander around their community catching virtual animals like the Pikachu you see on your screen. The game had an unintended consequence. Children and adults alike were trespassing all over the place in their quest to catch them all. Don't judge me, but I was an earlier player of the game myself. And that's how I ended up as a new employee getting to brief my police chief on the way the game was played so that he could alert his officers to the odd behavior that this game was causing. It allowed me to have this very small but very direct impact on my community's safety, which was not an area I had previously worked in. And that's my favorite part of the local government management profession, is it demands that continuous growth and development to be successful, and we have this ability to teach one another. No matter who you are or where you are in your career, you do have wisdom to contribute, and there's always more to learn. So seek those opportunities to share your experiences and advance your own development throughout your career. So that is the end of my remarks. I want to thank you all for listening to my section. I'll turn it over to Don.
Okay, well, thanks so much, Pam, for your inspiring story. We've got a number of questions that have come up, and I want to get to those in a moment. First, we're going to go to a polling question. Early on in Pam's presentation, she talked about some things that would help you snowball your career. So I'm interested in giving each of you an opportunity to respond and click off as many of the elements that you think would be especially valuable to you now in your career. So that you have a chance to reflect on what Pam has highlighted. Maybe some of these you've already identified, maybe some you haven't. While we're waiting for that, I know one of the ones, and I can see it already in the initial responses that people are talking about, is the networking one. And I'm wondering, Pam, it sounds like you're quite an extrovert, but what advice would you have to the introverts that, you know, recoil at the idea of networking? How have you found, or what do you think would be helpful ways for your colleagues to network at any stage of their career, but especially at an early stage where they might not know that many people?
Sure. Well, it would surprise many of you, I guess. I'm actually INTJ. I'm a strong introvert, believe it or not. And so this was, the networking piece was something that did not happen naturally for me. And I'm usually left exhausted after networking opportunities. But for me, I think number one, I was really thrilled to see that within this profession, people love what they do and are really excited to talk to you about it. And so I have yet to, you know, cold call someone or request a meeting and not receive a positive response and an opportunity to network. And so don't be afraid. We're in a profession where sharing is part of what allows us to thrive. And then the second piece goes to that kind of do your research and prepare yourself. You know, I like to approach, especially if it's like a large networking event or a mixer, you know, walk into the room with that kind of elevator pitch of yourself. Know, you know, where are you working? What's the biggest issue you're dealing with? Find a way to connect with the person that you're talking to. And when in doubt, ask other people lots of questions about themselves, because that takes a little pressure off of you from having to perform in a conversation.
Okay, well, super. So we're seeing that actually networking is a big issue for people, opportunities for them to get their snowball rolling, understand their strengths and how to use them, as well as saying yes to opportunity. We're going to get back a little bit later, maybe towards the end, because I want to move on to our next presenter, to talk about, you know, how do you know when to stop saying yes and start saying no, and how do you say no nicely? But just a little final point on the networking, you know, my feeling is that you should never have to cold call anybody, that you're only, as Facebook has shown us, 2.6 degrees of separation from anybody else. And coaches are a great opportunity for you to get a warm introduction to the people that you would like to connect with in the profession. So don't be afraid to take advantage of those opportunities. So thanks so much, Pam. Let's turn next to the topic of how we're looking at the whole question of mid-career, and many of you are at the mid-career stage. So some thoughts about key factors for success there. We're looking at what you can do to lead major initiatives, especially where you have a responsibility for budgeted outcomes. That's a key element in distinguishing people who are moving forward in their mid-career level. Presenting successfully to the various constituencies, demonstrating ability to lead in multiple areas, and the ability to coach and develop others becomes increasingly important, as well as your building your political acumen and your astuteness, and demonstrating that you can lead change. We live in a world of change, and dealing with the uncertainty of that is critically important. Some of the accelerators that will help you is to serve as an acting or interim for a position of interest to you, to deliver some outstanding results on a major project of high importance that gets you attention and also builds your skills and experience, to hone a strong personal brand that creates personal and organizational assets to attract opportunities for you. I'll talk with you a little bit later about that, but that's a critical thing. People need to know what you stand for in order for you to stand out. And having the promise that you are offering that it creates a preference for you, that's basically what a brand is critically valuable. And serving as that change agent that we were talking about before. Coaching can help in many ways at this level, and expanding that network, giving you additional warm introductions, offering perspectives, supporting your goal achievement, whether it's just in enhancing your enjoyment in the career position that you have or in thinking about where you'd like to go next. There are many resources at this level from ICMA. They have a Mid-Career Managers Institute. There are Career Compass articles on from Dr. Frank Benest on how to position yourself for advancement, how to perform the job before you get it. That's a great way to get a job. As many people say, you know, you get the job when you're already doing it or demonstrating that you've done the components of the job effectively. Attending conferences is useful, and there are brand building tools in the talent development resources at icma.org/coaching that I'll talk with you about a little bit later, as well as all the resources that the professional development team at ICMA have put together for mid-career people that you can find on the web. So we're moving now to Ben Bryant. And Ben, thank you so much for being with us today. And Ben is going to share with you his experiences in the mid-career and what he's learned.
Well, good morning for those of you on the West Coast, I guess, and afternoon for everyone else. Thanks, Don. I'm honored to be part of the panel. And thanks, Pam. That was great. And I'm going to try to actually echo a lot of some of the same sentiments and hopefully just build upon a lot of the themes that you started. And I know I'm looking forward to hearing from Bertha and her experience. So as Don mentioned, I'm Ben Bryant, and I have the wonderful opportunity to serve as the assistant city manager in Happy Valley. Just to orient yourselves, we're a suburban community of 20,000 people just outside of Portland, on your way to Mount Hood. And yes, that's the view we get when the sun on the rare Sundays. So in my role, I have the opportunity to oversee human resources, information technology, government affairs, city recording, and a beautiful library. So now I want to talk to you a little bit about how I got here. One of the first questions that Don asked, let me try to advance this slide. So one of the first questions Don asked is, what attracted us to local government? And much like Pam, for me, it all starts with a story. And there are kind of two different stories. The first is the easiest reason why I got into local government, and that was to follow in my dad's footsteps. So he was the city manager for the city of Albany, Oregon, for 17 years. Impressively, he started as the lifeguard. And after he got his degree, worked his way up to become the city manager. And to this day, he's one of my biggest mentors and coaches, and I talk to him pretty regularly. The harder answer as to why I got into this is because there were a series of events in my early childhood that really shaped my entire outlook on life. The first was when I was in sixth grade, my grandma was brutally murdered by her mentally ill nephew. And when they discovered her body, the suspect was nowhere to be found. And so our house, the house I grew up in, became sort of the safe place. So we had a police car stationed outside our house and then a radio inside so we could be safe and also up to date. Not too long after that, our house nearly burned down. And ironically enough, it was during a city council meeting that my dad was in, and the fire chief had to come in, interrupt the meeting, and let folks know that the city manager's house was on fire. And so there we were on the sidewalk with practically the whole neighborhood. And we got to watch the dedicated fire personnel do the work that they are trained to do. And they saved our house from complete destruction. And then just to top it all off, because who couldn't be stressed out after all those events, my dad suffered a pretty severe heart attack. We have a family cabin deep in the wilderness, and had to be rushed by an ambulance about 30 miles to the nearest hospital. And in each of these instances, our family was a consumer of the emergency services that so many of our communities provide and our residents rely upon. But the thing that was a lasting impression on me was not necessarily just that those services that were provided, but it was that sense of community. I mean, we had people outpouring of support for our family. By the way, if you live in a small community, you know what it's like to have every personal thing in your life be in the front page of the newspaper. But in our case, just the support we received from the community couldn't have been greater. And I knew from those moments on that I wanted to be part of an organization that helped foster that sense of community. You know, Don just mentioned the importance of sort of building your brand. And I think this, for me, that building of community is very much part of my brand just because of my own story. So now that you know a little bit about my story, I want to share a little bit about my career timeline. Rather than go through kind of each step of the way, I wanted to pull out a few milestones and some piece of advice to go with each. So the first piece of advice is just to get some boots on the ground experience. My first job was working at about 50, 60 hours a week at the community landfill, just right out of high school. That was an incredible opportunity to work with sort of blue collar America. And something that Pam talked about a little bit was how to deal with people over which you have no positional power. And I learned that lesson very early when I was at the landfill. You know, it's the difference between directing work and asking for help. The subtle differences in phrasing of the trash needs to be picked up versus when you have a moment, can you help me pick up the trash? Those are some incredibly valuable lessons to learn at such an early stage. So I hope you don't have to work at the landfill to get that experience, but find some opportunities to get out in the field, interact with folks who are providing services, direct services to our residents. I think that's incredibly valuable. So the next piece of advice I've got is to really stretch your comfort zone. I had the opportunity when I was in college to be a mayoral fellow for Mayor Daley in the city of Chicago. You know, so I came from Albany, Oregon, a smaller town in Oregon, and went right from there to city of Chicago. And just to give you a sense of scale, at the time, the population of Chicago was equal to the population of the entire state of Oregon. The issues that they were dealing with and that I got to work on were vastly different than any experience that I had ever gotten to know. And so that was incredibly valuable to me, but it took a little bit of a leap to make that jump and to go out that direction. And so if you have an opportunity to really stretch your comfort zone, I can't encourage that enough. So the next piece is really to be creative. I went to, for those of you who are on the call who are familiar with the University of Kansas MPA program, that's where I got my graduate degree from, you know that the second year of the program requires a full-time, often paid internship. At the time, it was when I needed this full-time position, it was at the depths of the Great Recession. And there weren't, most communities were laying off people, not hiring interns. I had the fortunate opportunity to meet at an ICMA conference, actually, two city managers from two suburbs of Portland who happened to be KU grads, and they individually could not hire a full-time intern, but they were able to work out a deal where each of their cities could hire me half-time so that I could get a full-time job and for the year. And that slowly snowballed into what's now the Oregon Local Government Fellowship Program, which has included as many as 16 different agencies, cities, and counties providing full-time internships spread across four different jurisdictions where you spend 20 hours a week in each city, and then in 6 months you switch and do it again. And so it's just a great opportunity for anybody who's looking for something, check that out. But message here is, even in this day and age, you know, you almost have to create your job sometimes. So be creative, be your self-advocate, and find something that works for you. So next is to really hone your communication skills. So Don mentioned this in the sort of the lead up, is the importance of being able to communicate with the elected body and anybody else. I have been blessed to have supervisors who really believe this and believe that it was important to get me in front of the elected bodies really right away. And I very distinctly remember the first time I ever presented to a city council. The next morning, the city attorney came into my cubicle and he sat down and he said, "Do you know what you did wrong?" And I said, "Well, I don't, but please let me know." And he said, "You referred to the city council as 'you guys.'" And I think that's completely a millennial thing maybe to do, is make it so it's less formal. But it was very impactful for me to hear that. And it was only because I had a city manager who was willing to take risks and put me in front of them that I was able to learn that lesson. And ever since, I'm know to be very intentional with my words, particularly when I'm presenting in front of our elected leaders, and not address them as "you guys." So my last piece of advice that I want to pass along that I learned as I sort of moved on in my career from some early positions to the one I have now is to really embrace early career risk. So when I left, I was previously at the city of Tualatin as an economic development manager. When I left to take this job that I have now, I was leaving a very stable environment, a wonderful city. I actually live in that city, and I have wonderful supervisors and coaches and mentors. But the opportunity was here. And the challenging aspect was that the city I currently work for has the lowest tax rate in the region. And is very much affected by the ebbs and flows of the economy. And coming, sort of being brought up during that Great Recession, early part of my career, I was a little hesitant to take a position where in a city that was so susceptible to those ups and downs. But like I said, the opportunity was here, and a coworker of mine at the time said, "You know, if you're ever going to take a risk, now's the time." And that was important lesson to learn, and you know, it took a little bit to get settled here, but I haven't looked back since. So if you have the opportunity, like I said, I encourage you to take a risk, particularly at the beginning of your career, when you may have fewer obligations personally. I can't stress that enough. So next, Don asked us to cover a little bit about how do we get our current jobs. So the first thing that was really important to me, actually these first two kind of go hand in hand. First one is to have great mentors and coaches. And I was fortunate enough, who's pictured here, Alice Cannon, is assistant city manager at Tualatin, and her along with the city manager, Sherilyn Lombos, were incredible coaches, mentors to me at the early part of my career. And so much so that they were able to help me navigate different career advancement opportunities as they came along. And I know that not everybody has that unique relationship with their supervisor to really be open and honest about another opportunity that might mean leaving that organization. But I was very fortunate to have that. So even if you don't have that in your current supervisor, you know, find a coach, find a mentor who you can bounce ideas off of. The second one is something that's been mentioned already, is the importance of networking. So I actually met my current supervisor, city manager, at a OCCMA conference. And so we got to talking, and he got to know me. And then he actually reached out to the city manager in the city I was working in at the time and asked if it would be fine if he could poach me. And so then together we were all able to have that conversation. But it just goes to show the importance of networking. I mean, I wouldn't have gotten to know him if it hadn't been for those opportunities at those conferences. The third is to be your self-advocate. You know, Pam talked about saying yes to every opportunity. Being a self-advocate is very important. So when I was first hired, I was hired as the deputy city manager, and I only had one direct report. And as our organization grew and changed over the first year I was here, there were some opportunities that came up, and I was able to go to the city manager and present a new path for me to grow and develop and take on some new responsibilities in a non-threatening way, as the organization was already kind of growing and changing. And so just being your self-advocate is very important. And lastly, I think it's important for me to acknowledge my own privilege. I know ICMA is doing a little bit on this right now. You know, just having a city manager as a dad is more advantage than most get. And I just have to acknowledge that I've had a lot of advantages that not everyone has, and it's important to give back. So now I want to switch gears a little bit, talk a little bit about what are the pros and cons of the current stage that I'm in right now as the assistant. The first, on the pro side, I love the feeling that drinking from a fire hose, feeling that, you know, there's so much more to learn. We often think about drinking from a fire hose in a negative light, but I enjoy that. One of my favorite quotes to live by is from Gandhi, who said, live as if you were to die tomorrow, learn as if you were to live forever. The second real advantage of this stage is, I coined it here, running with the ball and getting blocks from the city manager. You know, one of the traits that I really admire and respect from our current city manager is the fact that he will often hand the ball off to us to do the work, and he gets out in front and blocks, whether it's an angry customer, a citizen who's not letting us be effective, or even when the council wants to get, you know, in the weeds, he often serves as that barrier and really lets us do the work. And I respect that a lot, and it's fun. I like running with the ball rather than blocking. On the flip side of all of that, there are some drawbacks to this early or this stage. You know, it's been well documented the vice presidents have not thought fondly of the title of vice president, and I don't want to equate assistant city manager to that, but I think there are a lot of similarities here. I mean, you just see in this, I am nothing, but I may be everything. You know, it's a peculiar situation. It's an awkward job. You know, being number two comes with a great title and lofty expectations, but again, not always that positional power necessary to get the work done. Back to my example at the landfill that I started with, you know, sometimes it's often more effective to ask for help rather than to direct work. Even then, there are some challenges. I'd like to share just a quick story. When I was first hired, it was probably the second week, the city manager was out of town, and he was still accessible, but asked me to take care of a few things. And one of the department directors came to me and asked, he was dealing with a particular situation and struggling with what to do, and needed some guidance from the city manager, who kind of asked me to step up a little bit. And rather than sort of tell him what to do, I think because I was new, I simply asked a lot of questions. You know, have you thought about this, or what's the process for that, or and try to really work that through. And he kind of looked at me and said, you know, if you think you're going to come in here new to this organization with the rest of us who have been here for a while and tell us what to do, you're not going to be successful. I tried to politely remind him I was trying to simply ask questions. But that situation brings me to sort of my next point and last slide, is acknowledge that in this stage, particularly if you're younger, you may be a threat. And there are a lot of people who have worked you know, in my case, in this organization for many years and have tremendous experience and a lot to bring, and somebody new to the organization, younger, can be threatening. So make sure that you're acknowledging that. And the easiest way to combat that I found is really to find early wins. And I want to attribute that sort of phrase to a ELGL luncheon that I went to early on in my career, where Jordan Wheeler in Lake Oswego, if any of you know him, or Alex McIntyre, former city manager at Lake Oswego, now in California, talked about the importance of, for new hires, finding early wins. And so after that first experience that I had with one of those directors who clearly perceived me as a threat, you know, I sat down with the city manager and we kind of charted a path and identified some early wins in every department with every single department director, so that I could show my value, help them, and over time build that relationship. And now they're those same folks who, you know, I think were most hesitant to me being brought on are some of my greatest advocates and good friends. So I'm lucky to have that. Third is to know your passion. You know, back to my story, I hope your story of why you got into local government is different than mine. But make sure that you know that story and use it to motivate you and to build your brand, as Don mentioned. And then finally, I'm going to coin the song from Tim McGraw, is to always be humble and kind. Again, this I need to acknowledge my own privilege and help others succeed. I don't need to quote the full song, but I'll end with one of the phrases where he says, when you get where you're going, don't forget to turn back around. Help the next one in line. Always be humble and kind. So that's all I got. Thanks, Don, and thanks, everyone, for participating.
Well, great. Thanks for those inspiring thoughts. Really appreciate it. You've heard a lot of helpful advice from Ben, and I want to give you an opportunity as an audience to sort of reflect on some of the elements of that advice. It's not all of it, but some of it that I was able to capture here in a polling question for you, and click on which of the elements of advice particularly resonate for you at this time. And I know that and in modesty and in respect, Ben highlighted to you that you know, his father, Steve Bryant, was a key in helping him in many ways in the profession. And Steve Bryant is widely recognized in the profession as one of the major leaders in the profession. So certainly there is an advantage in having that family connection. But I would highlight to you, one of the things we're doing with the coaching program, the ICMA coaching program, is we have volunteer coaches, many people like Steve Bryant and others with senior experience, as well as people that might be at mid-career level that can assist you as you're going along. That can level the playing field for you. You can have the advantage of somebody in your corner who is widely respected in helping you, not giving you the answers, because you need to figure out the answers for yourself, but helping you to sort through the questions, sort through the issues, make some warm connections to people that can help you. And so we really encourage you to take advantage of that, rather than coming off of Ben's story as thinking, wow, yeah, that's a charm story. Well, obviously, as you could hear, there were many sad and challenging parts to his story, but at least in terms of, you know, personal circumstances that needed to deal with and overcome. But really encourage you to think about how you can network and tap and work with others and be effective in doing that. So we want to thank you, and we can see from the audience that there's lots of points of advice that came across. Majority of you found each of the items there, differing ones for differing people, important to you and important in moving forward with your career. So, Ben, we thank you very much for coming forward in the presentation today. And we'll be turning now to looking at the mid-career stage, at the executive stage. Some key factors for success in that stage include staying attuned to elected officials in your community, demonstrating even-handed professional management of information and support to all elected officials, Those are some key values for people to exercise in the executive role: working transparently, encouraging a diverse, inclusive organization to connect with the community you serve, and giving back to the profession. And some accelerators to do that are to become an ICMA credentialed manager. That's a way to stand out in the profession. It demonstrates you've taken extra effort to position yourself and to learn and to grow and to continue your lifelong learning in the profession. To do periodic goal setting and outcome reviews with your elected officials, to be active in your area and state associations, and to become known as a leader taking initiative to address tough issues, maybe not only in your own area, but regionally or statewide or across the country. Coaching can help here many times in navigating the soft skills essential for dealing with elected officials. Many executives, you know, have few people that they can talk to in their organization or elsewhere about the circumstances that they're in, and coaching can be very helpful. Frankly, of the people who have lost their executive positions, I find many times they were not about any technical issue. They were about things that, frankly, a coach could have helped them navigate through. So never too old for coaching and getting the benefits that can offer. So obviously, again, attending the conferences, exchanging ideas, the Senior Executive Leadership Institute that ICMA offers. Again, there's an article from Frank Benest in the Career Compass on City Managers Need Coaches Too, some survival skills resources that are available, and others that you can see at the ICMA Career Stage Guide. So delighted to have Bertha Henry presenting. And Bertha came to our attention because she was a winner of the Public Official of the Year Award by Governing Magazine, a great honor. And they highlighted in that honor the recognition that she took the reins, the senior executive role as County Administrative Officer in Broward County at the depths of the recession, and found a way to pull her organization and the economy through with some creative efforts. So, Bertha, we're delighted to have you here today, and thank you for sharing your time.
So now you're at that executive stage of your career, maximizing growth at the executive stage. You have learned a number of wonderful tips from Pam and Ben, tips like jump in and don't be afraid to show your value and add value where you can. Tips like being able to acknowledge when it's time for you to make that next career move, that you're not concerned about that, that you have enough confidence that you can do that and you make that change. I've been in public service for nearly 40 years. I began my career with the city of Miami, and fortunately, I was able to get my first executive level job 5.5 years into that career as the director of the Office of Management and Budget for Montgomery County, Ohio. And I will tell you the tips that you have learned from both Ben and Pam, and not to mention those tips that you get from ICMA, whether it's the key strategies or the accelerators. If you are able to deploy and employ those tips into your day-to-day as you're progressing through your work life, you are around the corner from experiencing that executive stage of your career. So let me move to the next slide. So I want to talk a little bit about some key success factors for an executive. And I'm going to touch on them a little bit briefly, and then I'm going to go into them a little bit more. So starting with what can you expect as an executive? One of the things that you should expect is that you will go through a transition. That transition is very difficult for, at times, for someone who is accustomed to being that go-to person and that hands-on In this role, you will depend on others to deliver for you. And that is very key to being an executive. And there are lots of skills that you touch on as you're moving through the career. But once you're there, they become so critical to your success. So I refer to it as being an orchestra leader. And with that, I mean that you have this team. It's a team that you've either honed that you built yourself, or it's a team that you've inherited. But it's a team that you have to be very cognizant of assessing and honing and nurturing their skills. That requires that team be very diverse. Having a diverse team allows you to really grow as a team, and it also gives you that flexibility to be able to take on an initiative, whatever that might be. The second is that you should stay in a constant state of learning. Believe it or not, the world is forever changing. And I will tell you that early on in my career, I used a reference desk. I didn't have Google. We didn't have microcomputers. I used an adding machine. All of these add to your ability to grow in your role and the members of your team. So stay in a constant state of learning. And then also, I would say to you as an executive, it's really critical that you be consistent. Your team will need to know who you are and how you will perform on any given day, and it's really important that they see that in you. So let's talk a little bit more about diversity. So diversity comes in many forms. So most people think of you have a team in Broward County. It's a very diverse community. So you're talking about diversity with respect to race, gender, sexual orientation, you name it. It is a diverse community. Your team should be reflective of that community. The other thing is, and people don't think about this a lot, but it's important to have people on your team that don't necessarily think like you. I'm sure you've heard of this concept of groupthink. It's not necessarily good for an organization. It's just you get into an echo chamber, feedback chamber, and each of you keep telling yourself what you want to hear, and that's not good for growth of an organization. So it's really important to have people on your team that think a little bit differently. They have skills that you don't necessarily have. I like to, whenever I'm meeting with a group, I like to acknowledge my strengths and my shortcomings. I am analytical. I am not that person that can, I didn't get the creative gene. And so I like people to make sure that I have someone on my team that's very, that can think big. You know, I can be that person that can help them get where they're going, dial them down when I need to, but also help them move a community. You need big thinkers at times when you have big issues. Also, I have found that these assessment tools, these personality trait assessment tools, can be very helpful. Our organization has worked with Appreciative Inquiry. We've done the Myers-Briggs. What I've learned from those, and I didn't think that I would, but I found that I have, it's important to understand that people process information differently. And it's important to me that when I'm communicating with an individual that I truly have reached them, that we are communicating. And what you will find as the executive, a lot of times people will nod and they'll shake their head when you're talking, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they understand it. I think it's just one of those things that they always want to make sure that the boss knows that they're on top of things. But it's also important to to find a way to continue that communication with individuals so that they know that you appreciate what they have to offer, and that sometimes you, and for me, I know that I have to slow down and really connect with individuals when I talk to them. So I want to talk a little bit about being in a constant state of learning. For any organization to grow, you have to stay in a constant state of learning. So you learn something new every day as an executive. There are things coming at you constantly. And with the right environment, every member of your team will appreciate that kind of learning, that growth. And it's, for me, it starts with hiring people that are smarter than me. I know for some people that might be a little bit intimidating, but I love the art of debate. I love really smart people, so that gets my energy going, and I love that in an organization, including amongst my team members. Also, it's important that you invest in training, and not just training for your team, but training for yourself. And in that, you should also learn to share what you have learned. Our organization, during its weekly or monthly meetings, we always talk about something new that we've learned and how we might push each other to be better. So learning, never assume that you're going to stop learning from others. And let's talk finally about the consistency. Things happen. Broward County has experienced 3 major tragedies in 13 months. The shooting at FLL, the patients that died at the nursing home during Hurricane Irma, and most recently the shooting at Parkland School. I never worry that my team will perform, because they know how our organization will respond and react in that type of situation. So having a team that knows who their leader is, what the culture is in the organization, they know we have a culture of service. It helps your team be on the top of their game all the time. They don't have to stop and worry about whether or not they're going to disappoint in any way, shape, or form. So I think that is important. And to kind of bring some of this to closure, I want to talk about my little do's and don'ts. So let's start with, if you can just take it to the next slide for me. So let me start with, if you can go to the next slide. All right. So I have what I would refer to as 4 or 5 different really key things that I think you will find important in your journey as an executive. Because once you're there, you want to stay there, right? Yes, you do. So let's start with intuition. There's always that little voice that's going to be speaking to you and guiding you. Things are coming fast and furious, and so you always want to make sure that you do what's right and not necessarily what's popular. I learned to trust my gut, and it's an accumulation of experiences that you've had and over time, and sometimes it's not readily apparent to you, but it's a voice that's speaking to you. Reputation. You and you alone control your reputation. Be careful who you lend it to. There are times when people get themselves in trouble or they are doing their climb, and they will use your name, they will use you in many different ways, but it's really important that you protect your reputation. You will hear a lot about ethics and the like. You're going to always be challenged, sometimes not as overtly as one would think. But again, if you learn to trust your gut and you understand that when you're about to make a decision, you need to be 100% comfortable with that decision because it affects your reputation and you own your reputation. Free time. Make time to get a break from it. It's not unusual for me to have 10, 11, 12 meetings a day. I begin my day at 5 a.m. in the morning. Oftentimes, I'm not in my car headed home until 7:30 or 8 o'clock at night. And there's only so long that you can stay on that treadmill. So I try to make time to, first and foremost, when I get home, cut off my phone. So I really don't take calls after 9:30. It's so hard because sometimes you'll see the phone jumping and you'll know somebody's trying to call you because they really, it's what is important to them is important to them without regard to what is going on in your life. So you have to really be disciplined about that. For me, I try to take 3 to 4 escapes a year. I want to make sure that when I'm feeling that, okay, all right, I really need to take a break, that I do that. Now, as an executive, do not think that you're ever off, completely off the grid. One of the things that I do if I'm traveling, if I'm on vacation, I have a set time each day that if someone needs to get a hold of me, that's the time that they do that. And if they miss that time, they'll just catch it the next year. But it's out of respect for my family that I'm not constantly on the phone when they're trying to enjoy what little time that they have with you. But that's something that you have to really work at and force it. And then finally, it's all about the mentoring. You will hear ICMA talk about mentoring up and mentoring down. You really have to take that to heart. Each and every one of us can remember that individual in our journey that really made the difference. They offered and gave us sage advice. You need to do that for others too. It's really important that for our profession that we're sharing our experiences. Hopefully someone can avoid some of the pitfalls that we may have, you may encounter. The one that I like the best, especially now at the executive level, is, you know, don't sweat the small stuff. I had someone say that to me, Bertha, not everything is worth, you know, going to battle for. So you pick your battles, you deal with those issues that are really, really, really critical, and don't sweat the small stuff. But as I conclude, I would say to you that our profession is rewarding. I tell people in the private sector all the time that as a public official, we do what we do with one hand tied behind our back. And you, as one in the public arena, you will know what I mean by that. But, you know, this is the profession that we choose, and we wouldn't have it any other way. So I say to you, good luck, and enjoy being an executive when you reach that milestone in your career.
Okay, well, Bertha, you brought up a lot of great ideas here and suggestions and practices, and a number of questions have arisen, and I want to take the few minutes that we have left to cover three questions that have come up along the way here. One is, you talk about how to have a constant state of learning. Could you just share maybe a couple practices of things that you do in Broward County to try to encourage constant learning? What are some of the approaches you use? If you just might briefly tick off a few, that would be helpful so people can understand, you know, what you're doing.
So once a quarter, I have a meeting of my mid-level and above managers. There's about 200 or 300 of them. We go out and we try to find someone in the profession to serve as an inspiration, someone who can tell us the latest and greatest on any a number of topics. We have been really concentrating on pushing leadership throughout the organization, and we sort of try to work with our private sector partners and chamber partners when they're bringing individuals in to inspire their company. I just let them know that when you do that, we'd like to tag on. It doesn't cost a lot of money, but you have these people from around the country to do that. Periodically, we do TED Talks. They have been very helpful as well. I think there's just so many opportunities. We have people in our organization who are really renowned in their own fields. So bringing on members of your team that have done something extraordinary to share. So it's always just about finding that way to learn something new.
Okay, great. Well, it looks like we have time for just one more question here, and that is, you talk about leading with consistency, but then I think about how diverse Broward County is, how much has been going on there. How do you provide consistency? What are some of the ways that you project consistency as a leader?
First, every morning that when I get up, I try to get my head in the right frame of mind. I recognize that employees, they look to their leader for positivity. So I will never walk into this government center with my head down or looking distracted. I work at being positive. Whether I'm in a meeting publicly or privately, my mantra is very consistent. My people don't ever have to think about, oh, there's no way that she would ever agree to that. And they know that because I try to walk the talk and demonstrate whether I'm talking to board members in a meeting or I'm talking to private sector individuals outside and where any earshot of my employees, they pretty much know that that I will have a very consistent approach to how I lead and what my expectations are of my workforce.
We want to give people a chance to respond to the great advice that you're offering before we run out of time here. So let's do that. And I want to cover a couple things while people are responding to the polling question so that you can cover a few more of the points that you wanted to be highlighting about from your presentation. And they still have a chance to give feedback about what they'd like to be putting into practice from what you've shared. So if you just give like a 30-second summation there. We've got a couple more things that our audience needs to be seen, and really appreciate your insights and advice and your learning from your success.
Well, you know, again, to kind of run through them quickly, cherishing your free time. As an executive, you're not going to have a lot of it, but you can be creative in how you manage that time. And I would share with you that you have to schedule free time the way that you schedule appointments on your calendar, and that'll pay lots of dividends for your family and family members who sacrifice as much as you do in the job as an executive. Again, mentoring up and down, you've heard that over and over again. It's really important to reach down and advance the profession by recruiting individuals, encouraging them to be a part of something that you know to be very special and rewarding. And then mentoring up as well. I can remember having an individual say to me, "Don't sweat the small stuff." Now, that was said 20 years ago, but it is still as important of a feedback today as it was back then. And so, as I sort of wrap up here, I find being an executive rewarding. It's really important that you build a good team, and that the team is comfortable working with each other, that you're in a constant state of learning, and in the end, I don't think any of us would have it any other way.
Okay, great. Well, thanks so much, Bertha, for those insights and experiences, highlighting really the importance of reputation and how you share your stories and share who you are as you advance in your leadership. I'm just going to highlight here, we don't have many people on who are in the encore stage of their career, but I'm going to, while our panelists are coming back on screen here, just highlight that there are a whole set of resources that are available about the encore stage. Many people are taking the opportunity because of their dedication to this profession to continue even after their full-time work and to contribute in many ways. And there are lots of resources to go forward with that. There are lots of post-webinar discussion questions we encourage you to review as a team. They're always provided in the announcement for the webinar and in the agenda packets so that you can be preparing for those and talking about them afterwards. Again, direct you to the career stages that's available in the ICMA websites. Professional development team at ICMA has been organizing those for you. Lots of things there at the icma.org/coaching website. Each of these tiles represents a major set of resources. I don't have time to go over those, but I do want to highlight a couple that are particularly relevant for today. There is a set of resources around talent development, and some of you are asking, how do you, if you keep saying yes and yes, how do you create some boundaries for yourself? There's some great resources there on making effective requests of others. When people are asking you to do things and you would like to be doing something different, how do you redirect that? There's lots of resources both in videos and in handouts that you can use around that topic. There's also a 30-page guide for how to take charge of your talent and resources and exercises for you to use along those lines. So I invite you to take advantage of that. We have one-to-one coaching. There are volunteer coaches that are eager and able to help you find the answers for yourself, encourage you to take advantage of that resource. And finally, we want to get some response from you today. We endeavored to cover and address a number of objectives, and we'd like you to tick off as many of the objectives that were of value to you and your agency out of today's session. And while we're doing that, I just want to go to our panel. And some people are asking about a couple of things. First of all, there's some very specific questions, like people trying to come into this profession from other areas. And I would encourage you to talk with a coach about that, because there's some great resources about that and probably very particular to your circumstances. And if you're again looking about how do you get a career mentor with ICMA, we call that a coach, and that was the one-to-one coaching that I shared with you a moment ago. Let's go back for a second to, you know, how do you say yes to the right things, and how do you say no to the things that don't fit? Who would like to take a shot at that question? I know, Pam, you were encouraging people to say yes, but your colleagues are saying, oh my gosh, I'm saying yes all the time and I'm flooded. Who would like to step in and offer a quick bit of advice in our closing moment here about that question?
Well, Don, I'm happy to jump back in. This is,
okay, great.
I recently received a really good piece of advice, because I'd given a presentation about saying yes, and someone gave me the art of the no sandwich. So you might have heard of the compliment sandwich. Well, the no sandwich is something similar, where you want to say no to something, but you want to be nice about it. And so you start with something very affirming, like, wow, this sounds like an amazing opportunity. And then you follow it with, unfortunately, I can't attend this time because I'm busy. And then you end it with, you were so thoughtful to think of me. Maybe I can recommend someone else. So there are tactics of how to say no that I'm learning about right now. But then, you know, I think it's leveraging or rather like weighing the contribution you can make and the impact you can have by saying yes versus what it's going to take out of you to say yes, and understanding where you need to draw boundaries.
Okay. We've got a final question here. People are asking, how do you get the position if you don't already have it? Many position descriptions, whether it's for a department head or a city manager role or county executive, ask for prior experience. Ben or Bertha, do you have a quick response for how to get the position if they're asking for you to already have had it?
Well, you accentuate the experiences that are most associated with what they're looking for. Oftentimes, people they assume that they're asking for, you need to have 5 years as an assistant city manager, or pick a time frame. Oftentimes, they're looking for experiences that would be analogous to that. So you know your resume, you know what you've done. Sometimes people call different tasks, different classifications, and shape them in different ways. I think you can try to sell yourself once you know what your experiences are. You still apply, accentuate those experiences that you have, and give it your best shot.
Okay. Well, thanks. Well, we're running out of time here, but I'm seeing lots of comments coming in through the question function, people expressing their appreciation to our panelists, Pam Weir, Ben Bennett, and Bertha Henry, for sharing your stories and examples and illustrations. So thank you so much for all you do for the profession, and for all of our volunteer coaches out there that are helping, and for each of you seeking to do your best in this career and serve your community in the best way that you can. The coaching program is all about how to thrive in local government, and let us know how we can help you in doing that by taking the survey after this webinar so that we can get your feedback. And thanks so much, and be sure to join us for the upcoming webinars. We're excited to have great presenters for those throughout the country. Our next one is Entrepreneurial Solutions for Local Government Challenges, ways to think outside the box and create practical and productive results in your community, engaging people and resources effectively to accomplish that. So be sure to join us on March 28th for that. And this is Don Maruska on behalf of the ICMA Coaching Program, thanking you all for participating today and wishing you success in your careers at every stage. Thanks so much. Goodbye.
Thank you.